What is the difference between love, priti, of material objects and love of Krishna? When the affection is directed from matter to Krishna, in a pure way, it becomes love of Krishna. Right? Notice it says in a pure way. So that would mean something that pure would mean what's established by Krishna. What he says is the proper way of dealing. What he says is appropriate. Right? So according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. So that would be pure. Without a desire for your own, you know, particular fruit of benefit, then it would be. Right? So that means when matter is taken and engaged in Krishna's service in a pure way, then that becomes love of Krishna. When the same affection is turned from Krishna towards matter, it is called material love or material attachment. Right? So it's, you're dealing with actually the same thing. Prabhupada says, the love turns into lust. So basically what you're trying to do is turn that lust back into love. You're dealing with the same principle, right? Because it's through that lust or through attachment that action is performed. So when that affection is for Krishna, then that attachment causes action in relationship to Krishna. When that attachment is material, then that motivation, then one performs activities, but for material benefit for yourself. Yourself or what is connected to you. Does that make sense? In the stages from Rati to Mahabhav, this affection is intrinsic characteristic for each stage. In the stage from Rati to Bhava, this affection has intrinsic characteristics for each stage. That would probably be better as has. So in the 10 stages from Rati to Mahabhav, each of these has a particular way that this affection manifests. Right? This stai bhav, qualified by relations such as dasya, attains the nature of rasa by mixing of the ingredients, anubhav, satvika bhav, etc. Okay. So that was 76, right? Yeah. So then the stai bhav means whatever is your natural relationship, because stai means fixed. Whatever is your fixed relationship with Krishna, then it attains rasa when it mixes with these other ingredients. Right? Because stai bhav means your natural relationship, but something has to happen for it to taste rasa. So when one's inspired by seeing Krishna, something connected to Krishna, then that vibhav then creates action. So then in that action, that anubhav then comes as the particular taste the particular emotion that experience from interaction. That will create physical results. I mean physical, physical results, physical symptoms, right, in sattvika bhava. Or emotion or mental symptoms in the Sanchari Bhava. So all that together, then that makes rasa. Right? But it's based on the Stai Bhava, right? Because it has to start from somewhere, like that. So now he'll go on and explain this point that was mentioned before about that each stage or each level then has some unique or intrinsic characteristic that makes it stand out. In the Shikshastaka Bhasya, based on the Priti Sandarbha of Srila Jiva Goswami, the development of Priti is described as follows. Undeveloped Priti in the first stage is Ulasamayi, jubilant. It is called Rati. So here is undeveloped, because it hasn't taken on a full character of intensity. Right? It's mentioned that when Rati is mixed with these other aspects of rasa, then when that intensifies, then it comes to the platform of prema. So here he's saying it's undeveloped. He didn't even say underdeveloped, just undeveloped. Right? Stai bhav is there. But the point is the stai bhav is going to be the field of activities. But it has to be mixed with these other aspects to actually come to prema. So it's undeveloped then. Right? Means for us, we would consider that very developed, right? You know, like that. Because you're actually situated in your natural relationship with Krishna. But the point is when here is so that means there's two things. There's getting out of the material world, getting into the spiritual world. So getting out of the material world, then the platform of bhava is very advanced. The Uttamadhikari platform is very advanced. Getting into the spiritual world, then there's 10 levels of this priti. Right? So that one can understand how great or how broad is this taste that's there. Otherwise, then one might not take it so seriously. Right? Does that make sense? It's nice getting out of the material world, being with God, doing all these things. But at the same time, as there has to be the understanding that you're actually going to be happy. Right? Because otherwise, we have our own happiness here, you know, or at least that little bit that we use that we kick around with. Right? But there's a lot of unhappiness, so we'd like to get out of here. But that going to the spiritual world, unless that happiness there is more than the little bit we get here, we might not be inspired to work so hard. Right? So then it's being pointed out what kind of, preview of what's there. This is not, one doesn't use it in one sadhana. It's a matter of understanding what the goal is, where you're trying to get to. Right? Because this section is on prayojana, so it's what is the goal? What is obtainable? Okay, jubilant. Because jubilant means that's pretty happy, right? Happy is one thing, but jubilant means it's so much energy and all that. Like that. But that's called underdeveloped, right? Because we're starting from that. You know, basically what we'd call ecstasy, that's where we start, right? It is called rati. This type of rati is present in Shantaras. When it appears, any other object than Krishna becomes insignificant. Right? So at this stage, that only Krishna becomes significant. Everything else that might be there in one's value system just fades. It doesn't have any meaning anymore. Right? So only Krishna becomes important. When Ulasamayi Rati becomes extremely possessive, it is called prema. Right? Because then shanta is that it's an appreciation. So basically speaking, is the shanta, it stays at this platform. Right? So it's a very ecstatic platform of rati, because prema means that there's possession. And in shanta there's no possession. It's just a matter of appreciation. You know, Krishna is the only thing that is of value and all that, but it's not that it's possessive, you just appreciate that. You just, only Krishna's nice, that's all there is, but it's not that you're thinking, you know, that relationship with Krishna is so important. Does that make sense? So you'll always be very happy like that. But that's why technically then Rupa Goswami doesn't count it so significantly as a rasa, because it's only appreciation. All the other rasas, of course, are based on it, but they have this element of possession. Therefore, it advances it forward. That's what makes the difference between shanta and the other four. Right? Is this element of possession. Right? When Ulasamayi Rati becomes extremely possessive, it is called prema. This is present in Dasya Ras. When this develops, all causes for breaking the relationship become feeble. When prema becomes Vishvasamayi, confidential, it is called pranai. This is suitable for Shakya Rasa. Right? Because you have that strong love and affection, it's unbreakable. So the performance of duties, the commitment to the relationship is complete. Right? So that it works very nicely in Dasya. But when it becomes confidential, that kind of like close intimacy, in other words, the formality is softened by this confidentiality, that informality, then the Shanta Rasa can come up. Right? Otherwise, then it'll be very, very formal. Right? When pranai manifests, there's no longer any reverence, even where reverence would be suitable. When pranai becomes variegated and becomes slightly devious due to taking the identity of a beloved of Krishna, it is called man, pride. Right? Because here, this anger means is that Krishna could be more pleased, but that situation wasn't taken advantage of. Right? They make some nice arrangements for Krishna, that he will be very pleased in those arrangements. He doesn't take advantage of them. Right? Then they become angry. It's not angry because of their own satisfaction. It's because Krishna could have gotten more. Does that make sense? So that makes sense only when there's possession. Does that make sense? When Krishna belongs to you, then you wanting to see him the most happy, that if he doesn't take advantage of it, then that anger can come. It's different from the anger here. The anger here is connected with oneself. That one's identity, one's ego, one's, security, you know, one's frustration at not being able to get something accomplished. These are all then causes of anger here. But they're all basically self-centered. You can take that and connect that over to Krishna and purify it, but that's not this man. It looks the same, but it's not the same. Right? It's very important to understand that as we understand this, if it's directed at Krishna, then it takes on one form. Directed at Maya, it takes on this other mood. But the formula is the same. So the same way also in relationships, how they'll develop, basically follow the same formula, just that you reduce the amount of, happiness out of it, down into, measure it in nanometers, or whatever you would call it. Very small, right? But something, for us, when you're used to, one drop is ecstasy, then if you get half a drop, then you're happy. You know what I'm saying? But we're talking about an unlimited ocean here, so, yes.
I'm just wondering, do the devotees on the platform have problems functioning because of their feelings of happiness?
But they put that on the side, like that. Rupa Goswami gives the example of Raktika, that, the ecstasy is so much that his hand is trembling, tears are coming to his eyes, and he's fanning Krishna, so he can't see Krishna or fan. So then he's basically cursing the ecstatic symptoms that they'll go away so he can properly do his service. So the ecstasy that's there, those are symptoms of it. So the happiness gained from it, that remains, but it's all these different ecstatic symptoms are not so important to them like that because they get in the way of the service. Right? They're not necessarily an inspiration. They're there. They're natural. They come automatically along with it. But it's just they're so focused on the service that they're not interested in anything else. Is that okay? It's not that it doesn't happen, but they're just not interested. Like that. Okay. When man appears, even Krishna manifests fear out of love because he doesn't want to disappoint or displease the devotees because Krishna's whole point is to please the devotees. They're trying to please him. He reciprocates. As you surrender, he reciprocates. They try to please him. He wants to please them in return. So their desire to please him is so strong and so possessive that therefore it manifests in this anger at Krishna for doing not, actually taking part in that service that could be rendered that would actually make him happy, that he becomes actually afraid that he should be there to accept their service. You understand? But it's not fear as in on reverence. It's fear out of affection. Right? Like that. So it's different. Very fine points. When the heart becomes melted, prema becomes sneha. With the appearance of sneha, there are symptoms such as shedding of excessive tears. Even though seeing the Lord, the person is unsatisfied. And though capable of pleasing the Lord, the person is fearful and unsteady. So then, So that softness, that tenderness that's there, then creates this kind of a thing of just so happy to be with the Lord, and then could do something, but you're so worried that you won't do it nicely, or this and that. It creates this unsteadiness, right? When sneha becomes full of desire, it is called raga. So that softness, it'll become stable again. That's raga. When raga appears, even a moment's separation becomes intolerable. Meeting is happiness, and separation is distress. When raga realizes the dear object in newer and newer ways, and itself appears in newer ways, it is called anuraga. Right, so when raga intensifies, then it becomes into this anuraga. With the appearance of anuraga, the person desires to take birth as an inanimate object just to be related to the Lord. due to the variegated prema resulting from mutual submissiveness. Right? In other words, we've seen before is that with this man, then there's a mutual submissiveness that's there. Right? Krishna is submissive to the devotees. Devotees are submissive to him. He's submissive to them. Right? Because before that, the pranay, then it's that friendship. So there's no necessarily submission. You know, that friendship, that camaraderie, that kind of closeness, that intimacy is there. But it's not submission. But at man, we see there's submission. Right? Then it goes soft. So we see it's appreciation, and then it goes into that possessiveness. Then it goes into kind of softens a bit, you know, as the intimacy. Then it goes into the man, is anger. Then it softens again as sneha, you know, deeper again. Then it goes more active again. So it keeps going back and forth. You can see between more active and more passive, more active and more passive. Does that make sense? But each time it's going deeper. When raga realizes the dear object, okay. When the appearance of anuraga, the person does, okay. During the pain of separation, Krishna makes a sudden appearance. When anuraga attains a state of madness with unequaled amazing appearance, it is called mahabhav. Right? Because the thing is the variegatedness, the newness, the freshness, the completely constantly changing elements. That's then is in your anurag. So when that stage attains madness, that's mahabhav. When Mahabhav appears during meeting, the passing of even one moment is intolerable. And a kalpa of time passes in a second. In separation, 1 second seems to be a kalpa. In Arunraga and Mahabhav, the ecstatic symptoms such as Sattvika Bhava appear in the most intense forms. Right, so he's saying that one moment in meeting is just it just seems like forever because each thing is so delicate, so sensitive, what is going on and anything said right or wrong and everything like that will create, you know, all kinds of ecstatic symptoms. And if there is separation, then a moment seems like forever also in that element of not being with. But in any case, the intensity then we see is the prominent element of this anurag and the mahabhav. The Kartika says, Priti, the very embodiment of spiritual pastimes, playing in unlimited ways, continually distributes rasa to Krishna. The embodiment of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. Due to the very nature of Priti, rasa becomes extremely blissful and astounding in Krishna, who is called Krishna, because he has a special attracting power for everyone. With his dark, beautiful form of compacted knowledge and bliss, Krishna is the supreme sweetness and the generator of priti, love. Krishna, the beloved of the gopis, is full of unlimited auspicious qualities and profuse pastimes. Krishna, the dearmost object to the soul, must be experienced directly through his name, form, qualities, and pastimes. That person who enjoys with Krishna in his Vrindavan form in the forest is the most fortunate, most intelligent, according to the Kena Upanishad. Kena Upanishad says, the five angas are serving the deity. Or the five angas are serving the deity, tasting the meaning of Bhagavatam with relishing devotees, associating with the superior devotees on Rag Marg, chanting the name and living in Mathura. Practicing these five with an offenseless heart, one obtains real mercy. Through that mercy arises a greed to serve the inhabitants of Braja, who are impelled by raga. From that greed there arises raganuga, sadhana bhakti, which transcends the scriptural injunctions and exclusively serves Krishna with the mood of affection of the Brajavasis. By practicing this bhakti sadhana, Very soon, pure, exclusive priti, kevala prema, for Krishna will arise. This is the esoteric teaching of Mahaprabhu. And this is Kena Upanishad. Okay, so he's saying is that these five main practices, then that is the natural thing that one practicing with an offenseless heart one obtains real mercy. So these are very, very powerful. Lord Chaitanya himself then comments how these five, even he cannot understand how special they are. Right? So this then becomes something very important. Right? So then it says through that mercy, that by that practicing the five, then you get the mercy of the Lord. That mercy then manifests a greed to serve Krishna in that moves like the Brajavasis. And that gives rise to your performance of the devotional activities because of that affection for Krishna, a desire to serve in this way. Does that make sense? So, in other words, you like doing what you're doing. You're not doing it just because you're supposed to. That's the meaning here that transcends scriptural injunctions. That doesn't mean you don't follow the rules, because we see before us when he says raganuga sadhana bhakti, he means that externally you're following the rules. Right, you always have to remember that that's the definition that the Acharya gives. So it means transcends the rule, scriptural injunctions. It means you're doing it because you like to do it. You're doing it because you want to please Krishna through this. Right? You're doing it because, yeah, it's just that taste that is coming from that performance of the service and that connection to Krishna and the devotees. Not because the scriptures say you should do it. You know what I'm saying? So one would appear that it seems like emotion, but it is. But this is leaning for the transcendental. That you got the papers. Just that you are inspired, that you like, and this and that is connected to Krishna. That's good. But we can see here because they know the Vaidhi, that means they have the knowledge. Because he said in the beginning, it's all based on the knowledge of the Upanishads and the Vedanta. So with that knowledge, you're practicing your Vaidhi Bhakti. That with time then turns, by the Lord's mercy, into rag, where you're practicing because it pleases the Lord. Right? So then that natural affection comes up. Right? By practicing this bhakti, and he says sadhana, then very soon pure exclusive priti, kevala prema for Krishna will arise. So this is the esoteric teaching of Mahaprabhu. So then you're trying to develop through these stages. Very simple. In other words, performing the devotional activities given by Srila Rupa Goswami, emphasizing these five main activities, then if that is done very nicely with a pure heart by Krishna's mercy, then you actually get a taste for performing devotional service in this way. So performing the devotional service in that mood of surrender, like the devotees in Vrindavan, because they're totally surrendered to Krishna, then that will give rise with time to pure unalloyed devotional service. Right? So that's what Lord Chaitanya is teaching. Okay, are there any questions on this? Yes.
Just on the last point, one of the youngest is living in the Dham. And I remember reading somewhere that says that one can be in the geographical location of the Dham. Still kind of influenced or trapped in filled with material energy. So, is there a comparative of what kind of benefit is gained by just coming to the Dham?
It means you're coming to the Dham because you know it's the Dham, so then therefore there's going to be benefit because you're coming here because of its nature. But that's why, you know, if you stay for 3 days, then generally you can focus enough. So as you stay longer, then you have to be more aware that you're in the Dham the specialness and uniqueness and like that. Right? So by appreciating, then that gets benefited. So the Dham can be by glorifying, by cleaning, by remembering, by beautifying. These are ways you serve the Dham.
So if you don't appreciate, you don't actually get the benefit of that hunger?
It means you'll get benefit by being here, because it just naturally purifies. But you always get more benefit if you know what's going on, if you're aware. Of course, if you're being offensive and all that, then of course you have the benefit of getting 1,000 times the detriment, like that. So that you do get that element is there. But if you're being careful and practicing properly, then you get 1,000 times the benefit. Point is how much you'll appreciate that 1,000 times or not, it's another thing. But it's there. So as you appreciate it, then you'll be able to take advantage of that. Does that make sense? Something else. Okay. Okay, the next. Okay, so here's the Shikshastakam. So that is the Dasamul. That Dasamul then is then the essence of Lord Chaitanya's philosophy. So he's given that whole thing there, is that establishing yourself, understanding means your sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana. Right? So in sambandha, you have to understand that everything that you understand about Krishna and yourself and that about sambandha jnana is learned from the scriptures. Right? So guru speaks on scriptures, sadhu speaks on scriptures. Scriptures is the central point. Then on that, then we know about Krishna. Right? So then Krishna then means that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, like we're studying with Isha. Then he is the source of all energies. And he is the ocean of rasa. Right? So that takes care of all the main categories of Krishna. Then the jiva, you have the nature of the jiva as the servant of Krishna. Then in that as jivas, then you have those that are liberated and those that are conditioned. Right? So then that completes that interaction. Right? Then you have the material energy, which is naturally one of Krishna's energies, but the interaction between the living entity and Krishna and the material energy, how they're all interacting, that is the Chinta Veda Veda Tattva. Achinta Veda Veda Tattva. So in that way, that's how the interaction works. So your sambandha jnana works because of understanding achinta veda veda tattva. Then you can actually balance between the living entity, Krishna, and the material energy. Because there's so many seemingly contradictory elements that are there, right? But the Krishna's potency reconciles all these, his reconciliatory potency, then takes care of this. So appreciating that, then one can understand so many nice, subtle things. Right? Having understood all that, one's position and the basis of that relationship on scripture, then there's the process of devotional service, abhideya, you know, with the 64 items of devotional service being performed because of the direction of scriptures. That's the Vaidhi sadhana. As one develops a taste for this and is established in this, one likes serving Krishna, then that takes on the element of the rag, because there's that inspiration to serve in that mood of surrender, right? As the residents of Vrindavan are surrendered, then that naturally then matures into bhava, and then bhava, by being practiced, then transforms into prema. And then prema and there goes through all these different stages of intensity. Right? Does that make sense? And then this way you complete all the 10 main points of the philosophy as Lord Chaitanya gives us. Does that make sense? Right? So we can understand here from the Upanishadic principle of the five is that we have God, you know, so he is in that position, of what he is in means being, how you say, supremely independent, you know, omniscient, omnipotent, all these things. The jiva is very small, and he is the eternal part and parcel of the Lord, the eternal servant of the Lord. Material energy exists, but it's inferior energy, but it's still to be meant to be used in the Lord's service, because that's the principle, everything connected to Krishna, then takes on the transcendental form. Right? Then the process is through devotion, and the final is having obtained freedom from the material world, one establishes oneself in eternal loving relationships with the Lord. That makes sense? So according to the Upanishads, that would be our philosophy. Okay? Okay, so now the Shikshastika. So that's the base of the philosophy. Now the Shikshastika, we know this is special. It's the only thing that Lord Chaitanya then wrote. And then based on that, our whole philosophy then is also then being given in both its philosophical and practical form, like how it's going to be applied. Right? Otherwise, he wouldn't have written this like this. We see it's also very special. It's the last chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita. So it means it's very significant like that. So it's like, of all our books, then it goes up Bhagavatam, and then showing how Bhagavatam is applied, you know, Lord Chaitanya applied as the Gaudiya. Then there's the three sections in the last section, in the last chapter. Then he gives the Shikshastika, like that. So it's one, it's the beginning, and we see it's also there at the end, like that. So now we're dealing with it at the beginning, and after 12 years, then we'll be closing with this chapter, like that, at the end of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Okay, so now here the Shikshastika, then we have the shlokas, these are Lord Chaitanya's, then there's a commentary by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur called the San Modana Bhashya, and there is also a commentary by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Right? So as it goes through, it will be more, just like on the other things, very technical, very metaphysical, everything in the beginning, and it will end up, as it goes, more and more developing with the elements of rasa. So it'll take one all the way through all the stages of devotional life. Shloka 1. Cheto darpa namarjanam bhava maha devagni nirvapanam shreya kairava chandrika vitaranam vidya vadhu jivanam anandam bhurivardanam patiparam purnam ritasvadanam sarvatma snapanam param vijayate shri krishna sankirtanam. Translation. Let there be all victory for the chanting of the holy name of Krishna, which can cleanse the mirror of the heart and stop the miseries of the blazing fire of material existence. That chanting is the waxing moon that spreads the white lotus of good fortune for all living entities. It is the life and soul of all education. The chanting of the holy name of Krishna expands the blissful ocean of transcendental life. It gives a cooling effect to everyone and enables one to taste full nectar at every step. Sri Sanmodana Bhashyam by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I begin this Sanmodana Bhashya commentary on the 8 Shikshastic verses written by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by offering my humble obeisances at the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya and his eternal associates in the Sri Pachatattva, namely Nityananda Abhidhuta, Advaita Prabhu, Gadadhar Pandit, and Srivas Thakur. Path of Perfection. The path of devotional service is the highest perfection of life, and it is sought after in all the Vedic literatures. Applying his superior intelligence to repeated research of the Vedas, Lord Brahma ascertained that the best method of self-realization is the awakening of one's loving attachment to Lord Hari, who dwells within everyone's heart. So, we're taking it from here is that Lord Brahma, you know, who is knows nicely the Vedas, right? Because he can just speak them. He's got 4 heads, and each head is, you know, can speak one of the 4 Vedas. So, he, having studied repeatedly, and with his superior intelligence, right? He's got 4 heads, not 1. And so he is able to, from that, he is understanding that awakening one's natural dormant love for Krishna that's the real thing that you're supposed to be doing, right? So that means all rules, all regulations, all practices in the devotional process then are for the purpose of developing this love for Krishna, right? There isn't another purpose, right? So if one's getting another purpose, that's a problem, right? But that's the only point that's made here. Faith, eagerness, deep understanding, and the association of pure devotees are required. Right? So you have this path going for devotional service. So that requires these. Faith, eagerness, deep understanding, and the association of pure devotees are required. So that faith has to be there. Without faith, then there will not be the inspiration at all to take part. Because one will not think there's something to gain here. Eagerness means if you don't want to get something, you're not going to get it. Right? That's the whole point. You have to want. So that's the in there's the faith is there, you start. Pranipata then means you have the eagerness. Deep understanding. So that means it's not just enough to have a superficial understanding. Right? It may be good for management, but it's not good for devotional service. You have to have that deep understanding. That means you hear about it, you contemplate it, you practice it. Right? But that means is all these things can be practiced in any aspect of devotional life, in any kind of service. Does that make sense? So that means by this deep understanding, then your quality of your service, whatever it is, will improve. So it's not a separate thing. It's not that it takes away from service. No, it improves the service. It improves the quality. And the association of pure devotees means that if you're not associating with those more advanced than yourself, where do you get that inspiration? Right? So you have to either be with their instructions or with them personally, however it is that you can get this association. Right? You beg, borrow, steal, somehow or another get it. Right? Like that. So that's the... So then, continuing. Brahma's philosophical conclusion unequivocally establishes the supremacy of devotional service over fruitive activities, speculative knowledge, or any other process. However, pure devotional love of God is unattainable without great faith and intense eagerness to relish the nectarine pastimes of the Supreme Lord, and without deep understanding of the confidential truths of the scriptures. And even when profound faith has arisen, it is impossible without the association of saintly persons to discuss the transcendental topics of the Supreme Lord. Sadhu Sangha is integral to the hearing and chanting process of devotional service. Because Krishna is always with devotees, right? Krishna is not happy to be alone. He's always with devotees. So that's why then in the process, being with devotees then is important, right? However you can. Like that. So this Sadhu Sangha. So if you study the scriptures, then one understands the broad range of what's there. Otherwise, as you've seen, as we've gone through these topics, we're coming across sometimes very, very technical, very, very fine points that are just, fine explanations of what we already know, what we've already heard. But it's just a matter of taking what we've heard deeper, right? Means what we read in the Dasamul, that is our philosophy. There's not something more than that, right? But finer and finer points of those 10 points, those can be discussed and understood. Does that make sense? Right? So many times those finer points, we might think this is something very new, very different. Right? Some of these things we may have heard of before, we may not have heard before. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it's like here, we've been discussing the Raganuga Bhakti, but not from the point of sentiment, but the point of just what it means and how it's part of our system. You know, some don't want to talk about it. Some only want to talk about it. You know, some never heard of it. You know, whatever it is. But the point is that depth to be able to appreciate and deal with these things in a proper, balanced way, what is appropriate. Does that make sense? Thus the Lord himself has declared, quote, "It is only in the association of my pure devotees that discuss about my transcendental glory." "It is only in the association of my pure devotees that discussions about my transcendental glory become spiritually potent and arouse loving devotional mellows within the inner core of one's heart." Okay, so only in the association of devotees, those discussions then come to the point where they give that spiritual potency that will then awaken devotional service in the heart. Because otherwise, I say, if one has a motive in discussing them, then whatever's that motive, that's what you'll get. You know what I'm saying? You know, like people, they discuss Bhagavatam and they do these Bhagavat Saptahas. And the basic thing is becoming famous and getting money and all that. And they do. They're very famous and they're very wealthy. Right? That devotion to the Lord, that's another topic. Right? That they're not known for. But, you know, being excellent speakers, being very famous, well-known, like that. Oh, they're good at that. But the point is it doesn't arouse loving devotional service. So that's the importance of associating with the pure devotees. Right? Remember, pure devotees starts from nishta. It's always important. Right? That makes sense? Yeah. The Lord's holy name, form, qualities, and activities are particularly glorified in such company. In Lord Chaitanya's teachings, he first discusses these glories. In the fourth line, for example, the word param indicates that chanting Krishna's all-purifying holy name is the very highest benediction. This follows the establishment of proper faith and association with saintly devotees. Thus, the process of devotional service begins. The chanting of the holy name is not sentimentalism. Right? So it's not, he's saying, it's not just some sentiment in that, because we have to remember Bhaktivinoda Thakur, his preaching then actually establishes Gaudiya Vaishnavism as, you know, a cultured, bona fide part of modern society. Which I find is hilarious, because nowadays they're saying it doesn't fit in. But exactly, Bhaktivinoda already did this 150 years ago. You know, so it's nothing to reinvent, right? The qualified Indians were getting involved in Western education. You know, the modern knowledge, the modern way of thinking. You know, these aspects of democracy and other elements like that, freedom. All these different kinds of things. So this is the environment he was functioning in. And the people were saying is that, you know, this Vaishnavism is just sentimentalism. And it's, you know, meant for just common people. Just, you know, because they would see all these sahajas and that. Very ordinary, nothing special. So in that, to the real intellectuals of Calcutta, you know, of Bengal, then he was establishing this as, you know, very, very high-grade intellectual understandings that can take one, you know, very scientifically and very effectively from the platform of ignorance to the platform of prema. Okay? So this is what he's doing, like that. So, yeah. So he's pointing out it's not sentimentalism, like that, because it has the science. This chanting is never to be confused with sentimental and pseudo-devotional chanting, however. In these Shikshastic verses, Sri Chaitanya explains, in his own words, the principles of Sambandha, our eternal relationship with God. Abhideya, the means by which we can revive that relationship. And Prayojana, the ultimate goal of that relationship for every living being. This commentary, then, we'll briefly examine each of these philosophical principles. As Lord Chaitanya, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is lovingly served by all pure Vaishnava devotees, says, quote, let the congregational chanting of the holy name be especially glorified. Therefore, please hear just how the chanting of the holy name is victorious in the mundane world, which is a creation of the external energy of the Lord. So now, moves to the next section. Is that clear? Pretty straightforward. The philosophical background, simultaneous oneness and difference. Scripture certainly evinces the absolute oneness of the supreme truth. Quote, only the one non-dual substance existed before creation. We read, and in another place, quote, other than the one non-dual Brahman, no variegatedness exists. In these statements, the all-pervading impersonal aspect of the absolute truth is established. Simultaneously, the statement, everything is Brahman, emphasizes the personal and differentiated principle of the eternal and supreme absolute truth. Though differentiated personalism and undifferentiated impersonal coexist in the absolute, it is the personal feature that is actually perceivable. Impersonalism is not. Therefore, the personal feature of the absolute truth predominates. Right? Because you know it's there, but you can't tell he's unlimited. How do you tell that? Right? You know, how do you know he's omnipotent? We're not, so how can we tell? Right? You can only judge something. You want to measure, you know, a liter of water, you have to have something that can hold a liter of water. Right? If you have something that, you know, does, you know, one, you know, nanomillimeter, then it's not going to do very well. Right? So the point is the personal can actually be perceived by us. Because we as persons can appreciate that. We're not unlimited, but the personal aspect we can appreciate. That's the common. The unlimitedness, the greatness, all this God stuff, that, even though we're trying to be, that's what we can't do. Right? But the personal, that we can deal with. Because we're people, and relationships are important to us, therefore we can appreciate that aspect in Godhead. Right? Good question? Our spiritual master, in the matter of scriptural conclusions, Srila Jiva Goswami, has therefore declared that the one absolute truth eternally exists in four features: as his original transcendental form, as his ever-expanding all-pervasive potency, as the living entities, and as the sum total of all matter. This is analogous to the features of the sun planet. The sun god himself, Surya, the powerful sun globe, the sunshine, and the reflections of the sun rays on other surfaces. Right, so he always exists in these four. So this is the non-dual substance. So they take the non-dual just to be Brahman. But he's pointed out here that it's him as a person, right? And then him as all his potencies, because they're only understanding the Brahman element of those potencies. So those potencies have qualities. They have abilities, they get things done. Right? Then the jivas themselves, and then the material energy. Right? So all this then exists in the Supreme Lord. So when he says non-dual, means all these four are all there. Non-dual doesn't mean it's just a kichari, you know, or it disappears, it's only one thing. No. Non-dual is that he's non-different from these four, but at the same time, it's always always in these four features. Does that make sense? The point here is that God alone is the supreme absolute truth, Shaktiman. That's not thunder. Okay. He is the only source of all potencies or energies. The Brahma Sutra. All right, so you can see the Dasamula is worked in nicely here. The point is that God alone is the supreme absolute truth, Shaktiman, truth. He is the only source of all potencies, that's the second. The Brahma Sutra does argue the essential oneness of the energetic source, Shaktiman, and energy, Shakti. Yet the Vedas conclude, quote, that supreme absolute truth manifests himself in a variety of forms. His potencies are multifarious. End quote. This proves that there exists an essential and eternal difference between the energetic and his energy, and that the inconceivable absolute truth acts in ways that are paradoxical and contradictory. The monotheistic school of the Kevaladvaitavad cannot successfully oppose with arguments the scriptural principle of simultaneous oneness and difference. Right? They'll have a problem with this because they can only deal with oneness. But here we notice that this element of variety, an unlimited variety, is there, is that that's what makes him in his position. So naturally, as we see, is from what we were discussing before in the Dasamul, is that that point, as the more there gets variety, more there gets newness, and the intensity of that, that's then is the farther it's going into the advanced stages of prema. Right? Because he's unlimited. So as that love takes on that form, right, then it moves to higher and higher levels, Right? So therefore, we can understand is that highest level of Mahabhava, that aspect is only manifested to its perfection in Srimati Radharani. Right? Because she's the only one that has, as much as Krishna is unlimited, has unlimited counterparts to relate with all that aspect. Right? And because he's unlimited, then it's unlimitedly fresher and newer in so many ways. Does that make sense? So it's not as it becomes more one that it becomes more elevated. It's as it becomes more varied, it becomes more elevated. Does that make sense? Any questions? Anything else on this? Yes.
Before you mentioned that the falling in our language, especially emphasized this attitude of falling to devotees.
Follow, yeah. Anupashyati.
Yeah. So, and in this way, that limited jiva can experience the experience of those people, of those personalities whom he is followed.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, the jiva is very limited. And for example, in the spiritual world, he serves through some devotees, Srimati Radharani. And her experience is unlimited. How the living entity can accommodate it?
It's not a matter of that. It's a matter of, it's like you have a musical instrument. It has the main string. What the main string can do and all that then is so many things. But the point is when it hits a particular note, then the sympathetic strings can reflect that note, can resonate that note. So it resonates according to its capacity. Does that make sense? So the point is it doesn't matter because it's enough for you. The point is when you're very small, anything that's that big as you is complete, so you don't have to worry about the rest of it. You know what I'm saying? Because that's all you can take part in anyway.
You know what I'm saying?
It's just like, let's say there's unlimited food. You can taste a little bit of it and appreciate the quality of the food, though you can't eat the whole room full of food. Right? But do you feel you need to eat the whole room to be able to appreciate? No. So that's the point. Because it's according to your capacity, then you're satisfied. Right? Because as Prabhupada says, we can eat a few rasgulas, 1, 10, 20 rasgulas, but Krishna can eat unlimited. But we can still appreciate the rasgula. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki,
Jai
Nitai Gaura Prinamani.
Thank you.